Welcome to Cliff's Wujo. A dojo is a place in which the martial arts are practiced. A wujo is a place in which the wu-wu arts are practiced. The wu-wu arts are all things officially denied and everything unknown. Good morning. It's August 11th, 8 a.m., 8:08, actually, Saturday morning here, 2012. Moving a little bit slow. Had a rough night. In any event, though, wanted to start off by apologizing to some physicians. Apparently, really irritated quite a few of them the other day with the previous Wujo talk, and I should have, you know, it's my fault. I should have gone into the history of the phrase, but I started off by referencing this old Arab curse, let he who is offended universe be delivered into the hands of a physician. And I really should have gone into the history of it, because it's for Western medicine practitioners as well as real healers in all forms, they get a little bit miffed. But you have to understand that in the Arabic world, from the time of the rise of Islam as a pan-Middle Eastern regional religion, they had this, and actually probably even before with the Sufis, there was the concept of the wandering beggar slash physician. And so these wandering mendicants who would go and beg for a living, many of whom were, you know, in the Sufi class, which is the Suf means the wool. They wore these these wool caftan things. They're sort of like the sadhu you find in India. You know, a bunch of guys that are working on enlightenment wandering around. Now, in this case, in the Arab culture, they also served the function as dentist and general healer of all manner of ills, and they all fell under the category of physician. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. This was a self-selecting process. So, as you can imagine, there were a whole lot of people calling themselves physicians that you would not wish to be delivered into the hands of, because they did not have a clue as to what was going on. And thus we have the rise of that phrase. You know, the modern educated, modern physician, the healthcare system, regardless of any individual capacity, at least does not have this self-selecting, self-taught approach to it all. And there's probably some saving grace in that. So if I offended those individuals who are trained under this system by referencing the other system, my apologies. It was not my intent. But we do need to acknowledge that my point was accurate, that the current system does not train healers and doctors to understand the body as it evolves over time and the impact that time has and should have on treatment. In any event, so we'll go away from there and go into time for a minute. This is the 22 trillion times a second talk, the materium description thing. I hope it doesn't get too long. I've got stuff I got to get done. It can get really complicated. By the way, it's a really good model for examining all things that appear in the physical realm, because within this model, it provides constraints that allows one some really good critical thinking. But basically, here's the idea. The materium is the larger set. Let's talk about it in a form of set theory. And in set theory, a critter is in a set or it's not. It can be in multiple sets. So for instance, a dog is in a set that has fur and is also in a set that has tails. Now, some things in the sets of tails, alligators don't have fur, but they have tails. So you can see how you can have an item that could be in multiple sets and they're not mutually exclusive. So you could say a dog is like an alligator in that one particular set that they both have tails. But also a dog is unlike an alligator because the alligator doesn't have fur and is not in the set of those beings with fur. So if we look at the materium as the largest possible set of reality in which all things that are material and all things affecting the creation of matter and etc. So in its largest possible bag, if you will, then this collection, these are computer terms, bags and collections, for set theory, then this very largest possible set contains things in it like the universe, and maybe bunches of universes. We can't tell because we're in one universe and we can only speculate about the existence of other universes. But there's nothing really to prevent other universes from existing within the materium the way things are structured. Now, the materium, we know, okay, there's a scientific principle that says things like the Big Bang can't have happened because any process claimed must still be ongoing in order to be real. I'm paraphrasing it very badly, but the concept is the God in the machine kind of a thing. The Greek playwrights were advised to not use deus ex machina to wrap up any plot holes, right? So you had to think about it, and you had to have your plot cohesive, and as a Greek writer of plays, you had to not resort to the idea of a little spot in the play where you said, here's where the magic happens and the plot's all resolved. So you can't use that. So this scientific approach says if you're going to claim that something occurred, then it has to have always occurred and still be ongoing in order for it to be part of the materium. Just because of the way that reality works, you can claim anything, but there's no proof the Big Bang ever occurred. There's no proof of a zero point of nothingness from which all of a sudden explosive energy arises. Now, I'm going to make a statement that'll sound somewhat similar to that, but it's not quite the same thing, and it leads to an entirely different understanding of how things evolved. So, and what we can say about this statement that I'm about to make is that unlike the Big Bang, which was supposedly this one-off event, and thereafter everything flew from it, here we have something that is continuing to this day, and that is this pulse. So we can think of the materium as including the universe, and let's just talk about our universe and leave all the other ones out of it for a moment. But the materium has, let's get really tricky, and let's just state some of the descriptors. It has no space. Space is a concept that's entirely within our own minds, and we can get into that in a minute. And it's also within the atoms that exist that create our brains, which are also within our own minds. But space, absent the atom within it, does not exist itself. And so the materium is a consciousness space, a virtual space, if you will. So it has no physical boundary in that sense and is able to define the physical boundary of itself because the physical only exists within the materium. And therefore, all physical laws are within the materium. And they don't apply outside the materium because there is no physicality there. There's no matter. There's consciousness, and that's in a different issue entirely. Consciousness can be thought of as surrounding the materium the way that bunches of us might gather around in an aquarium to stare through the glass and look at all the fishes. And so consciousness is ever-present, omnipresent, around the materium, and in essence, if you want to think of it this way, it forms the boundary layer that defines the materium without space involved. But here's how it all started. For whatever reason, we won't speculate as to why it all started, that'd drive us all crazy, but the materium started by a single pulse. The pulse goes racing across, defining space as it goes, until it said, okay, this is big enough for now. And then it whipped around and started to head back in upon itself. All this happened within 1/22 trillionth of a second. A pulse was created. Now, it's not like the Big Bang, because we don't have an ongoing Big Bang, but we do have an ongoing pulse. And so the pulse was created, it pops into the materium, it defines the interior space of the materium by its first movement, and that first movement was extremely small. It doesn't matter about this, and I'll explain why that is the case. If we can get to it, I'll make a little note here about getting back into space as an issue there. But anyway, so the pulse comes back on itself at within 1/22 trillionth of a second. It defines the materium and turns on itself, and then aha, boink, it disappeared. And that's because the pulse is this is controlled, so to speak, by the existence of itself, and that existence of itself is regulated to the point of 1/22 trillionth of a second. So 22 trillion times of a second, the pulse creates itself. It lasts for 1/22 trillionth of a second, and then it disappears. When it disappears, we have the pause. Some people will call it the gap. You'll also hear it referred to as the void, but I just prefer the pulse and the pause. The pause is a point at which the pulse does not exist. Now, it's also 1/22 trillionth of a second long, so the whole thing is 44 trillionths of a second, the whole process here. And the pulse creates itself, and here's the really cool part. It has the ability, because of the nature of the materium, to, when it creates itself the second time, it, in essence, started from where it left off, but because it did that, it also, because there's no time involved, had transited itself in its previous path to arrive at the point where it had left off in order to continue its journey without involving any time component. We can visualize it from our mental limitations as picking up from where it leaves off and just sort of let the other part of it go, which is can be relegated to thinking of the past. But so basically, the second time the pulse occurred, it picked up from where it left off and went back in on itself and collided with itself. And when it collided with itself, this pulse, because it's energy, produced a nexus, an intersection of these, of the pulse colliding with itself in the second 22 trillionth of a second that it existed, which is actually the third 22 trillionth of a second part, because the pause is in between. Now, here's the real key to this whole thing. The pause is necessary, and as is the pulse. This model can also be described as the continuous creation-destruction model of reality, because 22 trillion times a second we find reality within the materium created, and 22 trillion times a second it is destroyed. Without that destruction, such things as movement, growth, any kind of... without the pause, the materium would be a static, filled box with no possibility of life. Life could not exist, because life expresses itself through movement, and we would have static consciousness that just sat there, because it would be continually growing and never ever ever stop. So we need the pause, and so we need to think about this in the appropriate way, because each is an equal part of reality. Without the stopping of the pulse and then the recreation of it, we wouldn't have the ability to have that impetus to recreate. We wouldn't have the space, if you will, the pause, for everything to be recreated again slightly differently. And so instead of us existing, if we existed at all, in a static, no-pause environment in the materium, if growth was possible that way, you would be born, but then you would be a continuous long worm as you evolved over time, but there would be no movement. It'd just be quite horrific. I can't imagine such a situation. But the pause is a very key part of this, because it's also, later on, when you get into the really weird esoteric component of it, you start getting into meditation, or you take too many psychedelics and you're going over into the shamanic levels, you will find yourself able to transit consciously into the pause, and you can do things there. And this sort of makes sense in a way, because it is during the pulse that matter comes into existence, and your mind is creating your brain and everything within it, and so it's a little bit occupied. And within the pause, you have the ability to let the consciousness roam. And bear in mind, consciousness is not time-bound. So that 22 trillionth of a second can become fantastically long periods of perceptive time when you go and you do the meditation and so on. Okay, so getting back to this pause, or the pulse and the pause. So the pulse comes in, it pauses, and then it comes back again, it recreates itself, and it slams into itself, and we have that little tiny juxtaposition of two energy waves that where they slammed into itself. And then, because it's happening 22 trillion times a second, that it's going on out and whipping back in and colliding with itself, within the very first second, it had collided with itself 22 trillion times. And so we had quite the buildup of intersecting energy layers. And these intersecting energy layers, we can think of where they cross over and smack into each other in the turn, if you will. We can think of as creating a standing wave of energy. I won't go into the standing waves of magnetism and et cetera that manifest themselves within the materium, within our physical reality, but it's very much the same in concept as a magnetic containment vessel, as any form of a standing wave antenna, like the HARP kind of stuff, this sort of thing. So again, we are consistent within the known universe, how things work within the materium, and the descriptor that we're dealing with here is not postulating anything that does not logically flow from things we can observe within the material world. So in other words, the HARP energy is merely an extremely dense form and crude method at a much slower rate of work than the creation of the materium itself. So, getting back to this, within the second, we have 44 trillion collisions. Within the third second, it is estimated, in the Sanskrit guys who think about all of this, estimate that within the third second of the pulse, matter was created, the very first matter, and it was very likely a hydrogen atom. And here's the thing. You will find the idea that space is infinite and that the universe is expanding and other concepts within Western physics. Now, it is not true that space is infinite, but it is true that universe is expanding. How can this be, you say? Well, it's because there is no space absent the atoms which create it. So again, we are consistent within our model. We're not postulating something that doesn't exist. So Einstein et al. Are postulating an envelope into which universe can expand without ever describing what that envelope is. They don't tell you how this could be done, and they have all kinds of stuff that they... theories that they're speculating about the actual manifestations that we see in the materium, and they're, to a great extent, they're wrong. They're postulating things about the redshift that are not true. A lot of Patrick Garrell's work, by the way, where he has been proven accurate in terms of, you know, the shift in mass at galaxies far away from us and so on, is in the flies in the face of the Einsteinian Newtonian model, and yet it's quite accurate. And again, the consistent the continuous creation destruction model here has a consistency to it that is lacking in the Newtonian Einstein description of how things work. So here we are. The third second, matter is created. Well, the first thing that is created is a hydrogen atom. And when the hydrogen atom creates, as in all atoms when they are created from energy, an atom is merely our perception of the energy condensed, so to speak, into the material state. When those occur, they create the space they need around them. So thus, universe can expand infinitely, because every time a new atom comes in, it creates the space it needs around it. There's no need to postulate an envelope into which the matter itself creates, because as the energy lines of the pulse become increasingly dense until the point at which they create matter and it pops into the materium, they create the space that that particular atom needs, and it's not in any way interfering with any other atoms in the materium. And thus, we can also see that, for instance, this is all self-referentially continuous in terms of the integrity of the model, because the individual hydrogen atom creates the size of space it needs, as does every other atom through the periodic chart, and thus the uranium atom at 235, U-235, core mass, neutrons and protons, creates the space it needs. So each molecule that is large creates the space that's required. And so a lot of the other physics involved make a lot of sense. No two atoms ever really touch each other, because you can't have an atom cross its own space boundary. A lot of these things that we think actually occur that way are merely perceptions. And bear in mind, of course, that all of each and every atom, even though I say it creates itself within the materium, it is always and never changes from the energetic state itself. So, okay, so let's get really confusing here for a second. We exist within the materium. Our minds, which form our thoughts, our thoughts are carried on the physical atoms, the hydrogen atoms, the hormones that go through your body, the whole thing. All of the physical material part of our body ties to our thoughts, and thus our thoughts are interacting with the materium and are part of it. And so our perception is forever filtered by the materium and cannot be otherwise. But here's the reality of it. Even within the materium, even within those things that we believe to be solid, if you could move yourself fast enough, if you could move at 22 trillion times a second, you could move in the space between that creation, and everything would be absolutely fluid and it would appear mist-like to you, because there would be no solidity. You would see it create this second, you'd create yourself as part of it, and then you would independently shift within that 22 trillion time of a second and be somewhere else within there. There's no physical boundary to that occurring, because in the pause, nothing exists except in consciousness. Consciousness never goes away, even our little C-consciousness within the materium itself. And again, our little C-consciousness within the materium is perceiving the energetic and is creating the energy, by the way, that creates the universe all around us continuously. And so if you'll note, this is very much in a metaphoric or allegoric way a description of how the Hindus and the Buddhists and the Zoroastrians think of the creation of the world, and that their creator god is literally dreaming the planet, dreaming the universe into existence. And well, we're all part of that, and we're all dreaming it into existence, because the atoms in which we exist or that we create are creating their own space and making our way, so to speak, through the materium. But again, those atoms are nothing more than the intersection of trillions and trillions and trillions and untold numbers of intersection of energetic waves so dense that they appear solid to our minds operating within the materium, because our minds don't operate at 22 trillion times a second. If you could get close to that, you can see the materium being created in front of your eyes. But of course, now your eyes are also being created by the materium, so you've got some kind of a problem there perceiving things. And light only exists in the materium. It's an artifact of the materium, and it is created at the same level at 22 trillion times a second. And so we get into a real conundrum there, trying to examine the materium, the aquarium in which we operate, with consciousness. But it is feasible to do so. Many techniques have been evolved over time. The yogic and the Taoistic arts cannot be underestimated in this regard, because a lot of people think these guys, by the way, the Sufi, the sadhus, and the Taoist wandering mendicants were out there like the drunk immortals, or, you know, boozing it up or having a good time, and basically a good old boy. And while there may have been some that appeared that way, the goal of all of this was a highly precise and concise examination of the nature of reality, by minds that had sharpened themselves and dedicated themselves to this goal. I'm not saying that every sadhu that sets out for enlightenment thinks about this consciously in terms of, well, I'm going to sit down and really dig into reality here. But the individuals that make it to the Buddha level have done so, and they evolve over time. And those individuals may have started off as the guy who wants enlightenment because he wants to be able to do party tricks to get a lot of women to go to bed with him. And so, you know, he wants to be able to manifest bunny rabbits and, you know, other fuzzy critters, that kind of thing. And so his motivation at the beginning may be less than pure, if you will, but over time it becomes refined. He gets hooked by the process, and he goes on, and at some point he becomes dedicated to it, and the reason that he started totally becomes lost in the distance and forgotten. There's a lot of martial arts things about such things, about the becoming hooked on the process, such that your motivations are lost. And we find, if you want to examine the materium in a particular way, you get to the idea where, if we're standing waves of energy, guess what, guys? You do not create your own thoughts. Hate to tell you this, but you've never had a thought in your life that originated within you. You have responses to thought waves that come on in, and then you create the thoughts. It generates in most people the internal dialogue where you chew it over and talk words to yourself about the thing, or you visualize it. A lot of, you know, some people, about a third of the people, have thoughts that are graphic, and they actually just see little images. These thoughts are coming to you generated by the materium. You are not generating your own thoughts. What happens is that your intersection, the intersection of all of these various different levels of complexity and complicatedness in terms of the crashing of all of the various energy waves into each other till they form a standing wave of energy that is like an antenna that is your body that you perceive as a solid, because your mind works at only 40 to 60 frames a second and your body is creating itself at 22 trillion times a second. That is energy, that body, that standing wave is an antenna. And you, your body, is tuned by the materium to pick up certain thoughts. So it is my contention, my opinion, that it is impossible for me to think certain thoughts simply because my body and the condensate that is me here in the materium cannot perceive those. It is not tuned for those. And so I would not naturally and natively encounter those thoughts. Let's stop for an aside here and let me go into a pet peeve. It is possible for me to think thoughts that were not generated by the materium, that are generated by other beings operating within the materium, and that they want me to perceive things and they want to put images in my head. And I'm quite offended by these beings attempting to do this, because they're doing it en masse for their own reasons. And this is the underlying reason for the whole existence of propaganda, for the whole existence of the horror movies, the desensitization, all of this kind of stuff. And it's an attempt in my thinking, in my analysis, of an energy that wants to pervert the naturally occurring energy of the materium. If you want to think about it in a peculiar way, if you wanted to ascribe personality to it, you could think of it as the good versus evil kind of thing at an energetic level. And so I'm not natively going to walk around and generate thoughts of serial killers and their victims. And so I'm rather offended when someone makes a movie and then insists that, you know, through the nature of the media that we've got now, that all they make are horror movies, basically with underlying horror themes, that even the Disney movies, by the way, are just horrific if you look at the symbology of them. And the cartoons, oh, the horror there. In any event, though, see, the humans are not geared for that in a native fashion. We could, for instance, take away the impetus that is driving the creation of these abominations out of Hollywood at all, and I doubt that it would last two generations. Yeah, you would always have a horror movie and genre kind of a thing, but it would not dominate. This is part of the Kali Yuga business coming up, and I think that this will all change as we get into 2025 and beyond. In any event, just a little aside there about the materium and the way in which thoughts and this kind of thing work. So, because we don't generate our own thoughts, because we're basically antennas that pick up certain thoughts, and then we can respond and we can think. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that you're a robot, but the idea that you're going to have a particular thought zing into your head here from universe because you're vibrating at a particular frequency. And you get that thought, and then you, quote, run with it, in the sense that it triggers a whole lot of responses within you, and you grow around that thought and develop that thought into action or not. At one level, action, by the way, it translates to the word karma, and not the word karmans, which is the actual little critters that come and adhere to you, but karma is, in general, translated as action. And it is through the translation, through picking up that thought and translating it into an action, that you potentially affect your personal consciousness, little c consciousness, growth within the materium by attracting karma, good, bad, or indifferent. So you see, at one level, it's very complicated, But at this, at one level, there's a an elegant simplicity to how everything works, flowing off of the single pulse. If you think about the single pulse and the pause, and use that as an analytical basis for physical reality, we can postulate many things that just don't fit into the Einsteinian Newtonian model of solid little rocks floating around, kind of a thing, or even the 10-dimensional string theory with their brains membrane approach, because that I find to be rather flawed in a couple of ways. Although the words can be wrapped around the continuous destruction or creation destruction model quite easily. So anyway, let's talk about time for a second. Within this model, we have the two components of time. We could see, for instance, that because there is this pulse coming out 22 trillion times a second, that we have a base underlying chronos, a base underlying time count. So we have a giant metronome within the materium going tick, 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 22 trillion times a second, that allows all of universe within the materium and all of materium to be self-synchronizing. So this I find absolutely really cool. There's some little fishy guy in the Pleiades on a water planet there, who is quite happily engaged in his fish life activity. He's a hominid. He's just more fish like than he is ape like, and he's swimming around in his ocean over there in exactly the same now as me and the rest of us. We all share this incredible thing, which is the now, the ever present now, the EPN, I call it. And this EPN is really cool because it allows us to synchronize all of universe. And if you go and you were to, you know, read Sean David Morton's book, or you think about the Area 51 kind of reverse engineering and stuff, all of their crap, all their mechanistic toys all work on basically, I'm talking about, you know, the anti-gravity and the cold fusion and all of this kind of stuff, all work on trying to synchronize material responses to this EPN, which is the pulse. That's where all the free energy comes from. And you want to grab it just as the pulse is dying and goes into the pause, or just as the pause is dying and the pulse is creating. And that's where you get that little hiss of the energy that you can get into this universe, not as matter, but as actual energy. And that's, by the way, where our more gross forms of energy come on in, the electromagnetic and so on. By the way, when all of these 22 trillion times a second complexity of inner collisions occur to the point where an atom is created, all of our atoms are creating themselves 22 trillion times a second. Every time that they create themselves, they move. When an atom comes into existence in the material sense, in the material world, it spins. The reason it spins has to do with the nature of it coming through as a perceived solid, as a perceived matter. But bear in mind, it is bringing energy. There are no atoms on this planet, no perceived atoms in the universe that are static. They all bring in the energy that powers us all. So that's where electricity and everything comes in from. It comes in as, so to speak, the side effect of the spin of the atoms in the creation-destruction process. And so that's where all the free energy stuff comes from, and it's all valid. And we got to get off this, this oil jag and go kick the shit out of all of these guys that have been keeping all this secret stuff from us and tell them, okay, dudes, pony up or no more pie for you. And, if it gets really bad, hey, no more women for you. That'll really show them. Anyway, getting back to the time issue of all of this. So Chronos, mechanistic time, derives from 22 trillion pulses. Boing, 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 22 trillion times. That's our metronome. Now, that creates our pulsing bodies, which we perceive as solid. And by the way, when your consciousness is encountering extremely low blood sugar, extremely high blood sugar, blood loss, dehydration, excessive hydration, like drowning, suffocation, any of these forms of death or near-death experiences that involve an encounter with the material world and the absence of one of the things that it needs you or too much of the things that you need. You get, people will frequently say that they get, quote, shaky, or that they started feeling very vibratory. And see, what's happening is that your consciousness is starting to cross the plane of existence from the illusion of solidness into the vibration of actual creation. And as you cross into life and from life into death, you must cross this barrier, and you will perceive that. For another quick, before getting back to time here, boy, guys, I sure hate wasting your days with this, but I had so many people on my case about this discussion that I just had to get it out. And my poor fingers are involved with sanding at the moment, and I got sinus headaches from too much sanding, so I decided not to type it, and I was just going to give you the verbal wrap here. Anyway, so here's the thing. Your body is connected to the greater consciousness outside of materium. Your inner little consciousness is connected to your bigger outer consciousness, what all these people in the New Age world call your higher self or your greater beingness or something like that. It's connected by the intersection of all of these incredible number of energy waves, and it actually forms a little vortex shape tube. And this tube in Sanskrit terms is called the Shoshana. And it's a little tube that goes and narrows until it connects this little tiny radioactive bit of iridium, which is in your pineal gland, I think. Don't hold me to that. But it is within your upper brain, or your upper body. But the Shoshana terminates there, but it goes out, and as it reaches the greater materium, it widens out. And so this is the experience when you die of going into the light, because the Shoshana, by the way, being a vibratory thing, approaches more towards light than the denser material that we're in at the moment. And so that's why you have this light and the tunnel and all of that. It's a common experience with all life forms, because that is how life at a higher level is connected, little C consciousness to big C consciousness. And so when someone says, you know, you got to go to the light or not, it's like, well, I don't think you got much choice, because when you die, the Shoshana collapses. And as it collapses in on itself, it hauls the consciousness up with all the stuff that you're supposed to have. By the way, that stuff won't include your SUV, you know, your boat, or any of your money. So you'd better leave that kind of crap aside and figure it out what it is that you're going to be taking back with you and get to it. Anyway, so the Shoshana collapses and you die and you go back up there, and you are absent time at that point. And that's why everything gets really weird, and that's why we've got the idea of the limbo, you know, in perpetuity, torture, horror stuff arising from, you know, the twistedness of the Vatican perception of all of this. But getting back to the time nature of it, the Chronos is driven by the pulse. The Kairos, the quality of time, is not. The Kairos is flows on all the other energy exactly the same way that my sound or my words now are being conveyed. My voice is being conveyed on the electricity involved. The electricity is a carrier wave, and it carries my voice. And you can actually receive an emotional intonation from an electron that is dropping, so to speak, theoretically, into a digital matrix and going over to your ears. And so this electron, a static, so to speak, again, I mean, we know it revolves, but it doesn't contain any emotions or has no component to that, yet somehow it is able to carry and convey emotionality. Truly an amazing thing. Think about it. Without that, you know, TV is meaningless. Without the all actors and performers are masters at dropping emotions visually, through their voice onto electrons such that you perceive them. And the greater they, that level of skill, the greater number of people can perceive the same level of emotion from that individual. Whew. That gets really complicated too, because you've got to understand something else. Try and get all humans to synchronize when we're all so individually different, because we're all so, we vary so much in our, individual energetic waves and how they crash upon each other, which forms our vibratory frequencies that we are most receptive to. So I'm most receptive at the moment to being a vegetarian. Okay, this has been going on for 30 plus years. There's a lot of people that aren't receptive to this because of the way that their vibratory nature is. It has nothing to do with, we should not be critical of each other just because we are different this way, because quite truly, we cannot help ourselves. There's nothing under our control. And you notice, by the way, when you try and force beings to be other than harmonious with their nature, they get really irritated and it doesn't do them good. You know, you go try and convince a lion he's going to exist on soy, you know, he's going to be really irritated at you. So it has to do with the harmony of it all. It has to do with trying to stay as close as we can in a conscious level to the vibratory frequencies at which we find ourselves existing. And you can have an emotional response to your vibrational nature if you wish, but it is truly meaningless because you do not create it. This is the whole idea of racism I find to be quite absurd. You know, go and tell a Buddhist, you want to get a Buddhist to laugh, there's three great jokes. Coincidence, normally, and racism. Because let me ask you, I mean, I know, for instance, that the Shoshona comes down repeatedly with my, and I send little C consciousness into the materium repeatedly. We call this reincarnation. And so let me ask anybody here that has ever even considered the idea that they may be reincarnated. What race were you before? What race are you now? What race will you be in the future? It's absurd to take a racial, a hatred, a prejudicial viewpoint to any kind of a race, sex, gender, anything. Because, guys, you're likely going to be that in the future, or you have been that in the past. And maybe you were pissed at yourself or something, and that's why, you know, you don't like people with red hair, because you were just a bastard when you were a red-haired guy. But you know, no offense to red-headed people. I just pick it out, you know, because baldness doesn't really convey the perception. So racism doesn't really work. Now, getting back to the karyos component of this, and then I'm going to wrap this up and get some food here. But the nature of the chronos is such that it is the mechanistic flow of the electrons. The karyos flows across that the same way that emotion flows across all of our other communications between all beings, not just humans. People that have animals know that emotion flows between you and them continuously. Same thing with those people that are in tune with plants or water or whatever the hell. It doesn't matter. This is the shamanistic viewpoint of interacting with all these bazillions of energetic collisions that are going on that create the illusion of the objects around you. And the point, by the way, is the emotion. Because you got to think about it. There is no real value in an object. Something just sitting there in and of itself in no way adds anything to universe. Universe grows, consciousness grows through contention, and consciousness grows through obstruction and overcoming them. And in the process of growing, it generates within itself this state that we call emotion, that we feel as an emotion in here. And that is what consciousness, greater C consciousness, wants out of the materium. It wants us to learn all of this stuff and experience these emotions and then bring them back and get better at it the next time we come on in. It is within the nuance, the mastery of things, that life takes that huge jump up. So in fact, you find this is so, the complexity level, the harmonious interaction between usually a human and materium that creates what we call masters. I'm talking a master of anything, a golfer, archer, cook, writer, scientist, anything. Any of these people, any of these beings that master something, you will find that they have an appreciation for universe such that they are able to take the mastery itself, that abstraction that allows them to be extremely sophisticated and provide the mastery that they demonstrate to us in their talents, and apply it to other things. That's why we see so many individuals, especially in like the celebrity business, once they've mastered one craft, they it's not that they become bored so much, but they want that extra challenge, and so they go on to master another. And what they're really doing is, as George Leonard said, they're on the path of mastery, and the object is actually immaterial. Ha 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 ha. So you will find that, and this I didn't really mean to get into that component part of this, but you will find that mastery, emotion, and the nuances of those people that live good lives and are held up as examples to us, or used to be. We don't do that anymore in our media. Now all of it is crap and debased. But these individuals have within them a view of the process of materium that is not shared by the schooling system that is euphemistically educating the people around you. And so we get to the situation where we find ourselves self-selecting. We have the woo-woos and people coming and listening to this kind of deal and getting alternative views, because it is necessary that we not think the same kind of thoughts as are being promulgated by this evil force, or whatever the hell we want to think about it, however we want to label it, that's also at work here in the materium. And by that I mean this force that, you know, drives the pedophilic old pope of the Catholics there, you know, Ratzinger, Nazi dude, and the blood-sucking royals, and all of their ilk. Really does seem to a certain extent that the nature of the energies are becoming more clear and crystalline and more visible as we go forward, and that indeed there is some kind of an energetic change going on. Whether or not it translates into our DNA, whether or not we survive it or any of that, is, quote, immaterial, because we exist within the materium and we will recreate it in a conscious fashion after we destroy it, and probably have done so repeatedly for us in a consciousness level to learn things at that and experience things at that collective. But sure is fun to play around with. And the EPN and the omnipresent consciousness, which is the other subset of the thinking about the ever-present now and how it relates to time, and the quality of the karyos. Now, the karyos flows across the carrier wave of Kronos the same way that telephony flows across the carrier wave of the electrons. But it is not received the same way. In other words, if you've got ears and you pick up a telephone, and even if you got bad hearing, you're likely to at least have at some point have had the potential to hear. And you will hear sounds come through carried by the electrons. Unfortunately, it is my observation that we don't see the same thing happening with the karyos. Now, the karyos is floating across in a different waveform. And if you know, oscilloscopes and all of that, you'll know how the waveforms can be carried and yet be different. And not necessarily, if you want to think about it, harmoniously or in sync with the underlying carrier wave. And this is where we get to a little bit of trickiness that I alluded to in the last Wujo about the Kali Yuga. I'm noodling on the idea, and I've got some tentative conclusions that we're seeing the intersection of the karyos gradually over these past decades, probably thousands of years, come to a point where, and it probably has to do with the 13,000 year cycles, which are half of the 26,000 year cycle, which is close enough to the cycle of the precession that you can think about it that way. And it may have to do that we reach these points in space that are used to sync everything up, and that we're coming into one of those. But what I think is occurring is that between now and 2025, and maybe it'll take a couple of years after that, again, the numbers are for monkey mind, the karyos and the chronos are going to sync up. And that's truly a good definition of a golden age, where your emotional proclivities and predispositions are in harmony with what universe is delivering to you, and you are perceptive of that. I don't know of any other way to describe a golden age any more perfectly and precisely. And all of the other stuff would be, speculation as to how it's going to manifest. But the idea that, and this could be easily achieved if we had the karyos syncing up with the chronos in terms of how it was delivered to us, then more people would feel the quality of time and would be more harmonious with the expression of things within the materium, and we'd all get along better. And like I say, you know, trees would sprout pies at will and this kind of thing. Seems like there might be some potential for that simply because of what's going on within the nature of time itself. Now, there, just as an aside, just dropping into the materium here for a second, the shadow guys, the you know, hidden military, we've got secret flying craft and zero-point energy stuff, ha, 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 we're not going to share it. Those guys may be of the opinion, they are of the opinion that something is changing time around them. And they, I do know that they suspect a mind behind the change in the time. Not necessarily a human mind, but maybe space aliens or something. I don't know how they're thinking about it, but I do have reasons to think that they suspect a deliberate sort of someone coming back and screwing with time for their own agenda. Now, from my viewpoint, because I don't have a lot of the resources that they do, and I'm having to really work to get to the level of thinking that that delivers some of the insight, I can't tell if the changes in time are, quote, natural due to shifting in space and we're getting to this Kairos-Kronos sync-up, or whether they're artificial and we've got time travelers coming back and screwing with us. But I can tell you that I don't know. I have no confidence that the shadow guys could tell the difference. So, actually, it's not that I think the shadow guys are stupid or anything. It's just that I think they don't understand the real nature of things, and that they think, you know, atoms are solid, and they don't meditate, and they don't perceive things in a way that would make them as harmonious as they could be. And thus, we see a lot of the disharmony coming out of the universe all around us. Now, it's the age of disharmony, the Kali Yuga, so, you know, duh, shouldn't be unexpected. But nonetheless, we I do think that they would be well served to look at their underlying paradigm and examine some of their conclusions based on a new way of thinking about things. The 22 trillion times a second creation, continuous creation destruction model. Anyway, guys, I'm going to get some food here. I think I've covered pretty much it all. It's probably opened up all kinds of other questions. See if you can suss out a lot of them on your own. Because if you think about it, I mean, most of it's logical from following all of this. You know, by the way, this model supports things like remote viewing and all the other crap we got coming towards us in 2013. And I actually think it will be 2013. I think we're pretty okay. I don't, you know, have any evidence of that, but things just seem to be syncing up for February and beyond of next year. We'll report more as we get it. I'm going to go have some chow. Thank you.